Blog Talk Radio.
It's Saturday morning. We do this crazy thing called The Balance every Saturday morning. And for the next 90 minutes to 2 hours, I will be your captain. I am guiding you through this murky and crazy water of sports. We've got a lot to talk about today. I've got a loaded plate today. Playoffs, racing, the draft. Did I say racing? That's right. Getting close. It's only a few short weeks away till we're at the Indianapolis 500. Can't wait. Standing by, though, in the Balance Green Room is Adam Jevidin, super Buckeyes fan, Browns fan, Guardians fan, and super-duper Cavs fan. And we're going to be talking about the Cavs here in just a second and what they're doing in the playoffs, as well as across the NBA playoffs to include the Pacers and see what's going on there. Then we got Tony Donahue of the Tony D Podcast. Our official IndyCar contributor is down in Alabama, where IndyCar is at this week, and he's going to give us a glimpse of what's going on in Bama this week. And, of course, we're going to still be talking about the month of May because that means Indy, right? And then we got Steve Wilson, editor-in-chief of Speedway Digest, our official NASCAR contributor. He's going to break down what we saw in Dega, baby, last week, and Dover this weekend. And then let's wrap it up and put a bow on it with Ed Kratz, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles at SI.com, our official NFL contributor. He's been hanging down out at the Philadelphia Eagles complex all weekend, and we're going to be breaking down the draft, what the Eagles do, what the Colts did, and just giving them a grade across the board. We got a lot. Check us out at www.thebalancedsportscast.com, or our digits is 917-889-8516. My name's Tom Marquis. Stick around. It's about to get good.
National Guard is a reserve component of the United States Air Force and serves alongside active duty Air Force members in times of a national crisis. In addition, the Air Guard serves the state and local community in a wide range of capacities. The reason people join the Air Guard is as diverse as our members and includes such reasons as a deep desire to serve their country, money for college, travel, new job skills, and the pride that goes along with belonging to the greatest military organization in the world. I joined because I felt a calling to serve my country, but I didn't want to be far away from my family, so the Indiana Air National Guard was a perfect fit for me. With over 95 different career opportunities to choose from and 100% paid college tuition to any state-funded college, why not give us a call? Call 1-800-841-3103 or visit online at goang.com to find out more. Again, that's 1-800-841-3103. The Air National Guard, guarding America, defending freedom.
Oh, hi.
Hey.
I've seen on the board, do you guys have Black Rifle coffee here?
No, I'm sorry. We only carry good small batch coffee here.
Well, it is great small batch coffee.
Well, that really can't be unless it's fresh roasted, so I don't
Well, it is fresh roasted.
I don't think you know what that means. You know what this is? This is Masa Lekwa Pike, which of course in the Indonesian language, in the Indonesian language, it's weasel coffee.
You just made that up.
No, it's been passed through their digestive tract.
That's disgusting.
And then it's nature's wet processing.
Yeah, but is it good?
I mean, it's all right. Are they investor philanthropists? Do they support good causes?
Yeah, tons of causes. Veterans causes and first responder causes, but it doesn't matter because they make good coffee. So that's what I'm wanting.
Do you have any?
You know what? Actually, I'm just going to order it. They make it fresh and roasted.
Okay. Right.
Black Rifle Coffee.
It's good.
Welcome back to The Balance. My name is Tom Marquesale, Presidente. Joining us now, Mr. Adam Jividen, super Buckeyes fan, Browns fan, Guardians fan, and super duper Cavs fan. Welcome back to The Balance, sir. How are you been?
I'm muted. I'm doing good, Tom. How are you?
Sounds like a meeting at my office. I was muted. I'm doing great, great. I hear you've been quite the international traveler recently. How was that for you, sir?
I mean, it was good. It was, you travel overseas and sit in conference rooms that look shockingly enough like conference rooms in the U.S. So
Amazing the irony. I love it. That is hilarious. Well, let's jump right into this. We're going to be talking about the NBA playoffs. A lot to talk about, but let's let you put on your homer card and talk about the Cavaliers after suffering probably the worst playoff defeat in franchise history on Thursday night. The Cavs looked to bounce back and take a 3-1 lead in the series when they grind up. I really should change my verbiage, not grind up. I wouldn't change that. Because when I say grind up for Saturdays, you think of something not clean. Anyway, I digress. I don't know which is worse, me or you, Adam, but what are your thoughts about your Cavs, man? But you know what? The Pacers showed up and throw it up too at first. So there's that. But go ahead.
I mean, the thing is that I fully expected it to happen. Did I expect it to be that bad? No, but the Cavs, like, it was one of those games you're playing a young playoff team or a young team that's getting their first experience of playoff basketball. They are going back home for the first time after not leading for a second in Cleveland. I literally told my dad, I was like, Dad, we're going to get work tonight. And he was like, really? I was like, yep, just wait. The Magic are going to bring everything they got because they can't go down 3-0. So they had a sense of desperation coupled with playing at home and all of those factors. And I was like, we're not winning this game. In fact, we're going to get work. And they came out with an intensity that we didn't match. And then we got down big early, and JB pulled the starters. I mean, JB Bickerstaff being the head coach, pulled the starters, oh, gosh, like not even halfway through the third quarter. And then the lead just, like, blew up. So, and then, it ultimately shrank as the Magic put in their bench too. But it's what I expected to happen, so I'm not really sweating it at all. If I'm a team, if I'm looking at the Eastern Conference in particular, the team that needs to be worried right now is the Milwaukee Bucks. You lost home court by losing game two to the Pacers. The Pacers then turn around and win game three. So you're just giving them more and more confidence for a team that also had not been to the playoffs previously. If the Pacers now just protect home court, they're a first-round bounce. Giannis didn't play last night. We don't know if Giannis – I don't think Giannis is going to play game four. So you're going, oh, shoot, this team that had title aspirations, I mean, forget it's not looking good, Tom. The Pacers have Milwaukee on the ropes. And then you look at the Knicks series. The Knicks series is interesting because the Sixers probably should have won game two, and it was a complete hose job by the refs for them not to win game two. So, that's one that I could very well see the Sixers win game four and not this series up at two, so then it becomes the best of three. Ultimately, who do I think is going to win that game? I have no friggin' clue. or Death Series, I should say. I mean, right now, the way I see it shaking out is, I mean, the Heat are not going to go down quietly to the Celtics, and then the Heat are probably the last team the Celtics wanted to play in the first round. But nonetheless, here we are. And, I mean, I think the Celtics will win. I think it's going to take them a lot more than what maybe they anticipated for your standard, like, 1-8 matchup. Especially with a team that just cruised to the best record in the NBA. So I think Celtics will prevail in that series. The Cavs are probably going to win. I said at the beginning of it, before the playoffs started, I was picking Cavs in 5. I knew they would drop 1. It would allow them to get their heads back on straight. And then, and I actually said they would drop game 3. So I think Cavs win in 5. Mm-hmm. Right now, I think the Pacers win in 6. And then I still think Milwaukee, New York is literally a coin flip. I give the slight edge right now. I'm going to give it, even though they're down, to Philadelphia because of Joel Embiid. That's, in my opinion, the single biggest deciding, biggest both literally and figuratively, deciding factor in the East. In the West, the Thunder are going to keep just rolling over the Pelicans. I think the Mavs, after dropping game 1, are going to – they're going to keep this momentum going. And then we're going to be set up for an amazing, I think, Thunder – Oklahoma City Thunder versus the Dallas Mavericks series in round 2. The Timberwolves are just dominating the Suns physically
right now,
and
oh,
showing
yeah.
why
Absolutely.
Not, and showing America why. Hey guys, you know this position of point guard, it's kind of important. You can't just trot out 4 shooters like it's NBA 2K and expect to win the championship, which is what the Suns did, and then the Nuggets are just continuing to prove why. My gosh, they are a really well-constructed team. And Jokic could end up going down as a top 10 or 15 player of all time. He just makes the right plays all the time. And so I think do the Lakers maybe win game 4? I wonder if they've just given up. And if Darvin Ham, their head coach, still has a job, you know, within 2 days after them losing, I will be shocked because he has mismanaged this lineup all season for the Lakers. So I think you're going to have the Thunder the West is very chalky. Minus, I think Dallas is going to win out, but Dallas finished one of the hottest teams in the league. Post All-Star break. So I think we're going to finish in the West. Thunder, Mavs, Timberwolves, Nuggets, which will be, I mean, that is going to be some great basketball in round 2.
Well, let's talk about your guy, LeBron James. He is not a very popular guy right now on social media. He's so opinionated about a lot of stuff. And he made the comment after the Nuggets lost. He goes, at the end of the day, it's just basketball. Now, let's backtrack a little bit when a comment was made and all uproar was created and major controversies across the world and the world divided when a certain announcer said, just shut up and dribble. So now LeBron finds himself at the end of the day saying, it's just basketball. What are your thoughts on old LeBron James not using the playoff pressure as an excuse for the Lakers?
I think it's in a contextual situation. Like, people are upset at the Lakers, and people are getting – I mean, I've seen, like, death threats sent in for their performance on the court, which, guys, it is just basketball. Like, mm-hmm. I've heard a couple people were like, I mean, death threat, not necessarily to LeBron, but like to like D'Angelo Russell. I've heard some stuff towards Darvin Ham. So, like, again, that's where it's just basketball. the shut up and dribble controversy was more of like, athletes are also people too and can have a voice, and whether or not we agree with it or disagree with it, I will stand by LeBron James's – I don't agree with his politics, but I will stand by his ability to voice his opinion no different than every other American out there, right? Like, you can get on X or Twitter or whatever we want to call it, or Facebook or whatever thing, and you can, as Tom Marquis, promote your political ideology. But the second LeBron or another guy does, it's, we'll shut up and dribble. Or said reporter will do that all the time. You get paid to cast opinions about things. But the second a player does it, it's shut up and dribble. What LeBron's referencing is, guys, this is not so big that somebody should have death threats against him. Do I think Darvin Ham should be fired from the head coach of the professional basketball team known as the Los Angeles Lakers? Yes. He's not been a good head coach. Does he maybe need more seasoning as an assistant? Who knows? Maybe he's just better as an assistant. Do I think Darvin Ham should be fired from his life? No. That's the point we're making. This isn't like the gladiator times of the Roman Empire, where if you lose, you die. And I've seen those things, not just in basketball, but in football, and, I mean, across sports, where people are putting their entire identity of who they are into a sports team that they have no control over, and then trying to threaten someone's life if the sports team you don't have control over doesn't perform to your unreasonable expectations. If there's any Lakers fan that realistically thought you guys were going to win the championship, you're bonkers. Because, again, it's a flawed roster, and it was never going to win to begin with.
So you think LeBron is on the other side of the mountain with his career?
100%, dude. He's 39 years old.
Well, hey, look,
I mean, the thing is, he's 39, and he's still doing – again, we just take his greatness for granted. He is averaging 39 that most players don't average at 29. Dude, there are all-stars that don't average what LeBron is averaging at 39. A good example is Anthony Edwards, outside of his defense. Because, again, like when you're LeBron's age, like, you ain't going to play defense every possession. Like, it's, you know, the last possession, game seven of the, you know, 2013 finals for, I don't know, for kicks and giggles. You're not going to play every possession like that. Anthony Edwards at 23 does. But LeBron still averaged almost across the board better numbers than Anthony Edwards, who is considered one of the young faces of the league. So, from that perspective, what he's doing is incredible. Where it's in today's social media age, it's just people. This is where athletes, especially, I would be like, dude, you don't need to have any social media platform on your phone. You make enough money, hire somebody to do all of that. It's the same thing that I said to Donald Trump. It's the same thing I would say to current President Joe Biden when he's making weird frickin' TikToks about ice cream or whatever. Like, you don't do any of that stuff. You hire somebody that's smarter than you to do all of that.
Yeah, you know, I normally don't interject political stuff on this show, but I will take a moment to laugh at something that I saw this week. He's given a speech at somewhere. I don't know where he was given a speech at, President Biden was. And then he literally said, and we will stand together, and we will defeat and win or be victorious. Then he was just supposed to pause and let the crowd go crazy. He went, and pause. And pause. All right, we digress. This is about as much political we'll ever get on this show. But when you said about the TikTok in the industry, I'm like, that's funny. All right, let's go ahead. Let's break down by the games. Kind of broke down what we think is going to happen in the series. But let's take a look at the games themselves that will have an impact on the series that are happening today and tomorrow. We'll start with the Cavaliers and the Magic at 1 o'clock. What are your thoughts? I know you've already given us some thoughts, but what are your thoughts on this particular game?
I think the Cavs are going to win. I think game three. So last year, for context, same core for the Cavs minus a few bench players. Game three or last year, the Cavs got just physically manhandled by the Knicks, and Tom Thibodeau outcoached J.B. Bickerstaff like we haven't seen in a long time. Just coast rings around him. Games one and two, the Cavaliers never trailed in either game. So you're talking eight quarters of basketball, and you led the whole way. And then they get to Orlando, and Orlando just, again, a young team at home, starts hitting on all cylinders. Crowd gets into it. They feed off of that even more. It's what I expected. Now, with that being said, I expect the Cavs to lock in defensively tonight. It's what the Cavs have made their bread and butter for these last 2 years. But I expect them to lock in defensively tonight. I expect them to really get after it, make life hard for the Magic. I think the Cavs win a tight game, a back-and-forth game, probably somewhere in the realm of like – I would guess maybe it's a little bit lower scoring, but maybe I'm thinking like a 97-92
win. 97-92
win.
Let's see how close you are. You're usually pretty close. Let's see how you are. Let's look at the game three of the Thunder and the Pelicans. Like you said, the Thunder is just rolling all over the Pelicans right now, but they play at 3:30. What are your thoughts on that game?
The Pelicans – They're just thoroughly outmatched almost everywhere in this series. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is just – I mean, if you would have told me that that kid would grow up and become an MVP candidate, I would have been shocked. But he is playing phenomenally. The Thunder are so deep. They're just going to roll right past the Pelicans. It's a four-game sweep, and then off we move.
On we go. Celtics and the Heat play tonight at 6 o'clock. I like the Celtics in this matchup. I really do like the Celtics in this entire series. But what are your thoughts on the Celtics and the Heat?
I like the Celtics in the series. I don't like the Celtics in Game 3. The Celtics have not played under pressure for so long.
Mm-hmm.
They might even come out in this one a little flat. Them getting down 2-1 will be the best thing for their playoffs moving forward, and I think that's what happens. Miami, again, they've got some young players, Jamie Jaquez, for example, who will feed off of the Heat crowd down there in Miami. I think we see the Heat led by, one of the most underrated head coaches of our era, Eric Spoelstra. I mean, the dude is just phenomenal. Always puts his team in a position to win. And I think the Heat win tonight. Now, with that being said, I still have the Celtics winning the series.
Tony Dungy and Anthony Richardson were at the Pacers game last night. Just throwing that out.
I mean, there are a lot of people there. I mean, Anthony Richardson might be feeling a little solid. They got themselves a receiver last night that slipped down on the draft board because of apparently, I will say this, Tom. I know you're probably going to get into it later with Rick, but I love the Adam. I am really hard on Chris Ballard. I love the Adam Mitchell pick. Like, I was like, let's go. Like, that's a good pick. You get a guy that slips because of some issues. They're saying he's a type 1 diabetic, and he probably just, like, on marathon days like they have at the – at the combine, he just may have, like, not managed it super well, And I'm like, you know what? Colts have doctors for that crap. Like, bring in a receiver that's got size and some speed. And if you look at, if he can flash, the Colts now actually have a really solid young receiving core. I don't know that they have anyone that's like, that you would say is a pure number one receiver, but between Pittman, because like I've said for a long time, I think Pittman is a phenomenal number two. But if he's your top guy, but what the Colts have done is the Colts without a Justin Jefferson and a Jamar Chase, Marvin Harrison Jr. type player, now just have four young guys that are solid across the board. If Mitchell can prove to be who I had Mitchell personally as my, I think fifth, I'd have to look at my list, my fifth highest receiver in this draft.
We needed one.
So I thought it was a great pick for the Colts.
Yeah, we're going to get into this later with Rick. I mean, you got me saying Rick, with Ed, not Rick, but either which way. Real quickly, tonight, 8:30, the bad blood continues between the Nuggets and the Lakers. And you think we probably do have a real true rivalry maybe between the Nuggets and the Lakers, because this drama has been going on ever since last year in the Western Divisional Finals. So this isn't going to stop, but, you know, hey, it's Hollywood, I guess, and you got to have some Hollywood. And the Nuggets, they're out there prospecting for another championship. You see what I did there between Hollywood and prospecting?
Hey.
It flows off my tongue, buddy. It's nonstop. It's nonstop. Nuggets and the Lakers, what are your thoughts tonight, sir?
The Nuggets are just too good, too deep. They don't have an answer for Nikola Jokic, which, I mean, to be fair, like, nobody has an answer for Nikola Jokic. It's kind of like what we're seeing out of Jokic is like LeBron in his prime. I don't know if you remember, like, LeBron, you know, his last year in Cleveland, the first go-round, the run with the Heat, some of the runs that he made with Kyrie and Kevin Love. When LeBron was, like, in his prime and he was like, I'm going to go get 40. You're like, I can't do anything. And he'd be like, I'm going to go get 23 and 10 dimes and 14 boards. That's what he wanted to do. That's where Jokic is at. Jokic dictates the game for whatever he feels like it needs. And he just, the Nuggets don't, or not the Nuggets, excuse me, the Lakers, they just don't have a match. Nuggets win again. Another sweep on the opposite side of the West where we are. I mean, I'm not kidding, Tom. If my prediction lays true and it is Nuggets, Timberwolves, Mavericks, and Thunder, that is like that's the best possible matchups we could have asked for. And it would be must watch for any basketball fan.
Well, we'll be tuned in to see what happens. And Ed, now got me calling you Ed. And Adam, and we hope to have you on throughout the series. Of course, you are our partner in crime for a lot of things, our Swiss Army knives. So we appreciate you coming on. Where can people find you working masterpieces, sir?
I'm kind of a social media ghost. So, you can find me on Facebook. I don't post anything.
Find you here, buddy. They can find you here.
Exactly.
All right, buddy. Have yourself a good weekend, sir.
All right. We'll see you, Tom.
See you. Adam Jibbitin, our Swiss Army knife. Love having him on. We talked to him NBA, but, of course, he's a Browns fan, a Guardians fan, a Buckeyes fan. Like I said, all-around Swiss Army knife. My name is Sean Markle. We'll be right back with Tony Donahue. We're going to talk some IndyCar down in Bama.
Oh, hi.
Hey.
Seen on the board, do you guys have Black Rifle Coffee here?
No, I'm sorry. We only carry good small batch coffee here.
Well, it is great small batch coffee.
Well, that really can't be unless it's fresh roasted, so I don't, you know.
Well, it is fresh roasted.
I don't think you know what that means. You know what this is? This is Masa Lekwa Pike, which of course in the Indonesian language, oh, let me finish. In the Indonesian language, it's weasel coffee.
You just made that up.
No, it's been passed through their digestive tract.
That's disgusting.
And then it's nature's wet processing.
Yeah, but is it good?
I mean, it's all right. Are they investor philanthropists? Do they support good causes?
Yeah, tons of causes. Veterans causes and first responder causes. But it doesn't matter because they make good coffee. So that's what I'm wondering.
Do you have any?
You know what? Actually, I'm just going to order it. They make it freshly roasted.
Okay. Right.
Black Rifle Coffee.
It's good.
Mayor.
All right, and welcome back to the panel. It's Tom Mark with El Presidente. Thank you, Adam Dividend, for jumping on and breaking down the NBA playoffs. Pacers got a good win last night against the Bucks, a well-needed win, so we'll see what happens with them. But joining us now, Tony Donahue of the Tony D Podcast. You know, I almost called you Tony Dungy because we were just talking, Tony, about Tony Dungy being at the game last night. So welcome to the Valley, Tony. You headed down to Bama, or you're already down there?
I'm in the parking lot of a Buc-ee's right now.
I love it. I love me some Buc-ee, man. And when we went to North Carolina a few weeks ago, it was the first time I ever had a chance to go to a Buc-ee. It was an experience.
I've never been, so this is a first-timer for me.
Right by the train. All your senses will be touched at one time. Put it that way. You'll enjoy it.
I like it.
You'll enjoy it. Well, let's get into some IndyCar talk. We got you for a few minutes. Big news out of IndyCar with Joseph Newgarden. His win being disqualified in St. Pete because of a push-to-pass issue. I know they've been testing. So help us novice people who don't really understand why he was even allowed to get the checkered flag in the first place. Now, here we come a few weeks later. And he's now disqualified from that win. Talk with us a little bit about what that is, what happened, and was it an intentional thing, you think? Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that, you know, there's a lot of people in the paddock that think it wasn't an honest mistake. Joseph did show a lot of emotion yesterday in his press conference, and kudos to him. He would, you know, we saw a statement from Will Power. We saw a statement from Scott McLaughlin of what happened. And then Joseph, you know, came in front of the media yesterday, so you got to give him credit for that. He showed emotion. He's a guy that's really worked on his image over the last year and a half. He's eliminated some quote-unquote distractions in his life. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know if it was on purpose. You know, when you know it's there, you're probably going to use it. And that's exactly what he did. He obviously spanked the field down in St. Pete, so there was certainly an advantage there. On the restarts, that there was three restarts, and he kind of pulled away. So, but you know what? He owned it, and a little bit of a rivalry, and maybe having, you know, their big guy, their number one guy, be a little bit of a villain is probably good for IndyCar. Just on the fact that there's not as much drama as you'd think there would be in IndyCar, and it kind of adds to it, and that's kind of what the series needs.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how that happens. So just who was the P2? Did they move up to the P1 in that particular race?
Repeat that. I'm sorry.
I don't know. I can't remember who was the P2 in that race. Does that driver move up to now the P1, the winner of that race?
Yeah, so Pato Award is awarded the win. He had a couple of funny tweets like, hey, do I get the trophy? Can we do like a celebration? But, yeah, so Joseph was eliminated from the race, basically. All of his laps led, everything he did was taken away. He finishes last, which obviously is going to put a damper in his points to start the season. And this is a guy who's in a contract year with Penske, although some are saying that he's already re-signed with Team Penske. And it moves Scott Dixon, who finished top six at St. Pete and won, as we know, last week at Long Beach, puts him to the top of the points lead.
Is this a scandal? Is this a push-to-pass scandal? Is this a thing, or is this just it happened, and let's just move on?
I think it just happened. It's an honest mistake, but people aren't going to let it go. People still want answers. I know IndyCar teams want answers on why it happened, how it happened, and how it will be prevented in the future from happening, not only to Penske, but to, you know, their race team as well. So You know, look, a little bit of controversy is not a bad thing. I'm sure the CW is loving it with their 100-day out show. So, you know, it's a little bit of a scandal, but and it's crazy that it happened to Team Penske and it happened to you know, a driver that is obviously the forefront of the sport.
Well, let's talk about the race that's happening tomorrow down in Alabama, the Children's of Alabama Indy Grand Prix. Let's talk about that. And, you know, the push to pass is going to come into play in that particular race as well. Talk with us about Barber. I like Barber because they got all these cool little statues around the track. They got the very well-known giant spider. Talk with us a little bit about Barber as the track. And again, are we going to have another situation with the push to pass? Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see anything controversial like that. I think everybody's going to be on their best behavior. But I think you're going to see a motivated Joseph Newgarden, you know, the revenge tour and coming back and trying to get back in the championship hunt starts now. So the place he got his first win of his career back in 2015. His teammate Scott McLaughlin is going to be quick. He was top 10 in practice yesterday. He obviously won this race a year ago. So I think the Team Penske Joseph Newgarden revenge tour starts this weekend.
I love it. Well, you know, we're just a couple weeks away from being out there at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Can't wait. Obviously, the Grand Prix on the 11th, and, of course, the 108th running of the Indianapolis 500 on May 26th. Our drivers, our teams, you would think in theory they're not. Let's get through this race, and then we'll focus on Indy. But you know that they're focusing on Indy. What are your thoughts about as we go into the month of May here in Indianapolis, one of the best places in the world at this time of year?
Yeah, I've talked to a few drivers about that, right? Like, you go to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway in late April for that test, and you're kind of getting the feelings going. Then you got to go to Long Beach, then you got to go to Alabama. Now, last year, the Indy 500 test, there was just Alabama left. It's like, okay, how do you not overlook that? But, you know, every driver I talk to, it's all about gaining momentum in the month of May and having a good set to go into and have that team camaraderie. I mean, look, every team except for Team Penske heading into this month of May has had some sort of change, whether it's a driver change. You know, every team has had somebody new come in or a driver leave. Besides Team Penske, they're the only team that has the exact same lineup heading into the Indy 500 as they had last year. So it's about gaining momentum. You know, you think about a guy like Marcus Ericsson, who's now on a three-car team at Andretti and still learning his guys and learning what ticks. And by the way, they haven't ran an oval yet in a race together. So I think it's just a lot of camaraderie that can be added from a lot of momentum heading into the month of May. And you need that because it's three big weeks, right? You got, you got the Grand Prix in 2 weeks from today. Then you got qualifying weekend, which is obviously huge. That's probably like the third most popular race on the schedule. And then you go from there.
Absolutely. Super excited. Real quickly, let's look at Long Beach. What a win for Scott Dixon. If anybody can save gas, it's that guy. And you know what? I put $5, what the heck, on him to win. And I got paid. I love it. But what a great win for Scott Dixon, the Iceman, out in Long Beach. What were your thoughts on that race?
Yeah, you know, when the strategy went that way, it was like, oh, well, here we go. Dixon starting. It's like Dixon doesn't want to start up front. If Dixon starts 12th or 15th, make a fuel card, he's got a chance to win races. So, yeah, it's just Scott Dixon doing Scott Dixon things. 20 straight years with a victory. He's 10 away from the all-time mark of 67, which A.J. Foyt set. And I think he can do it. I mean, he's probably got three or four good seasons left. Can he get 10 wins in those three or four seasons? This dude's won four out of the last six IndyCar races, so he's certainly getting hot at the right time.
All right, I need your DraftKings $5 pick for tomorrow's race, today's Xfinity race, and tomorrow's NASCAR race in Dover.
Give me Scott McLaughlin to win tomorrow. Xfinity today at Dover. Give me Justin Allgaier, and Cup Series tomorrow at Dover. Give me Kyle Larson.
Love it. Well, you enjoy your time there at Bucky's, and I promise you, you will walk out a different man, sir. Where can people find your work in masterpieces?
Yeah, Tom, you can check us out on Twitter this weekend. Tony D. Indy will have a bunch of sights and sounds from Barber Motorsports Park.
I love it, buddy. You have yourself a good and safe trip, safe travel, sir. Tony Donahue, on the road, down at the Bucky's. Sensory overload, I kid you not. I loved the opportunity to go there. I was like, what is this thing about Bucky's? Why is everybody talking about Bucky's? Bucky's this, Bucky's that. I get it now. And you know what? It was fun. I can check it off my box and say, hey, I have been to a Bucky's officially. Now, Steve Wilson, his wife loves Bucky's. They go there all the time, apparently. So he's an expert at the Bucky's. And we'll be talking to him here in a few minutes about Dover. But he can give us some insight on Bucky's. But Tony's down there at the Bucky's, and it's something. It's something to be had. If you've never been, you got to at least go. I'll tell you what. So he's traveling down to Barber. It is the IndyCar race in Barber. Thank you, Tony, for jumping on and also giving us some clarification on this whole scandal. Can we use the word scandal? Everybody likes a good scandal every now and then. But scandal with their coffee talk, right? Sounds like it was an innocent mistake. I'm curious if he didn't have to push the pass, if he wasn't allowed to use a push the pass, why did he have to push the pass? That would be what my thought would be, like, okay, it's just like if you run out of gas, you don't have gas. You know, you don't have to push the pass. You can't use it. It's not like it's – the way I always understood it, and apparently I'm wrong, is that it's gone. You push it all day long, nothing's going to happen. Here's what happens. We're going to go ahead and get back on track with our spot schedule, and then we'll be back, and then we'll be talking with Steve Wilson, editor-in-chief of Speedway Digest and our official NASCAR contributor, about what's going on in Dover this weekend.
National Guard is a reserve component of the United States Air Force and serves alongside active duty Air Force members in times of a national crisis. In addition, the Air Guard serves the state and local community in a wide range of capacities. The reason people join the Air Guard is as diverse as our members and includes such reasons as a deep desire to serve their country, money for college, travel, new job skills, and the pride that goes along with belonging to the greatest military organization in the world. I joined because I felt a calling to serve my country, but I didn't want to be far away from my family, so the Indiana Air National Guard was a perfect fit for me. With over 95 different career opportunities to choose from and 100% paid college tuition to any state-funded college, why not give us a call? Call 1-800-841-3103 or visit online at goang.com to find out more. Again, that's 1-800-841-3103. The Air National Guard, guarding America, defending freedom.
When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be confusing. Like Swedish techno confusing.
Bark, bark, meow, meow. Dance with me, purple cow. Bark, bark, meow, meow. Ooh, you lovely cow.
Geico makes it easy. With 24/7 access, all you have to do is go to Geico.com and you could save money on car insurance. It just makes sense. Unlike... you know.
Dance with me, purple cow. I like your move.
When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be hard. Like early 90s heavy metal hard.
I'm yelling and screaming and I'm loud. Roar.
Geico makes it easy. You can review and update your policy or report a claim on Geico.com or the Geico mobile app. Because shouldn't we all have a little less stress in our lives?
I'm not even upset about anything!
Morning face. You get it when you don't sleep well. This is what happened to Linda.
Morning, guys.
Good morning. Ah, what is that thing?
It's me, Linda.
Oh, my God, it talks! Run!
No, it's me, Linda, from HR.
It looks hungry! Save the children! Save them! Stay back! I've got mace!
Ow! What am I...
We're moving!
It's called beauty sleep for a reason. And there's never been a better time to get some.
Get 20% off IKEA Sultan mattresses. IKEA, love your home.
Oh, hi.
Hey.
Seen on the board. Do you guys have Black Rifle coffee here?
No, I'm sorry. We only carry good small batch coffee here.
Well, it is great small batch coffee.
Well, that really can't be unless it's fresh roasted, so I don't, you know.
Well, it is fresh roasted.
I don't think you know what that means. You know what this is? This is Masa Lekwa Pike, which, of course, in the Indonesian language... Oh, let me finish. In the Indonesian language, it's weasel coffee.
You just made that up.
No, it's been passed through their digestive tract.
That's disgusting.
And then it's nature's wet processing.
Yeah, but is it good?
I mean, it's all right. Are they investor philanthropists? Do they support good causes?
Yeah, tons of causes. Veterans causes and first responder causes. But it doesn't matter because they make good coffee. So that's what I'm wanting.
Do you have any?
You know what? Actually, I'm just going to order it. They make it fresh and roasted.
Okay. Right.
Black Rifle Coffee.
It's good.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you.
Mandy, Mandy Pepperidge. Well, I haven't seen you since we...
Go away.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I can only stay a minute. Let me buy you some lunch. Oh, you've got your lunch. Well, how about some milk? You got your milk, too. Well, can I just massage your thighs while you eat?
Do I have to leave?
I'm gonna ride till I can't no more. I'm gonna take my horse to the old town road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more.
I got the horses in the bag. Horse stock is attached.
All right, and welcome back to The Balance. We're chugging on along. 917-889-8516. A rainy morning here in Indianapolis, high and top. The Balance Studios in the west suburbs of Indianapolis. But that's okay. It's bright and sunny inside here, the Balance Studios. If you want to jump in the conversation, 917-889-8516 is our digits. Thank you if you're listening to our podcast, which I know a lot of you are. The good thing about our podcast is that it is our live show. We don't do any fancy editing or anything like that. What you hear, good, bad, or indifferent, it is what you hear on the podcast as well. So go ahead and put one of those likey things underneath where you get ever and you get the podcast at it. And that way we know how awesome you are. Yeah, we know how awesome we are. I mean, the great thing about it, by doing that, you also get a notification every time we drop, which is within a few minutes of the end of this show, the podcast drops and you're like, whoa, I got to drop everything and start The Balance. That's what you got to do. That's the rules of the game. Or, okay, more realistic, it's there for you whenever you want to listen to it. So we'd love to have you, though, a part of the podcast again. So if you're listening to us live, give us a call at 917-889-8516. Thank you, Adam Jividen, super Buckeyes fan, Browns fan, Guardians, and super duper Cavs fan. And Cavs are struggling a little bit. So we talked a little bit about that, but always cur at him. They will bounce back. And if they don't, he's already got the reason why they don't. Man is passionate about his sports, and I love it. That's why he's a partner in crime here on The Balance and one of our Swiss Army knives. We're going to be talking here in just a few minutes. We're going to be talking some NASCAR out in Dover with Steve Wilson, editor-in-chief of Speedway Digest, our official NASCAR contributor. Thank you, Tony Donahue, who was driving down to Alabama, and he's at a Bucky's. What is your experience with a bucky? If you don't know what a bucky is, look it up. It's a, I used to think of it as a truck stop. It's far more than that. It's a gas station, and it's a convenience store. I mean, they got them everywhere. They're popping up everywhere you go. And complete sensory overload, that's for sure. But anyway, thanks, Tony, for joining us on the Tony D podcast, so talking about what's going on in Barbara. And more importantly, this thing with Joseph Newgarden, we're going to be talking about the NFL draft. Don't let your hearts be troubled about that. We are definitely going to be talking about the NFL draft. Ed Kratz, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles, NSI.com, will be joining us from Philadelphia and breaking down what's going on in the world. Joseph Newgarden, he loses the win, the qualification, if you will. No, not even qualification. He loses the whole lap out in St. Pete. And what happened there? And so we need to kind of understand it. Now, Tony thinks it's not a scandal. Maybe it is. Maybe it's not. But at the moment, it's what everybody's talking about. And, you know, like Tony mentioned, we aren't going to stop talking about it. Fans aren't going to stop talking about it. And every time we have a race with a push-to-pass deal, there's always going to be that in the back of our mind. Okay, now wait a minute, especially if it isn't our driver, especially if it isn't our guy that gets into victory lane because the guy who won used to push the pass. So we're going to be saying, did he really have it? So, you know, IndyCar president Jay Frey is the commissioner of this series, and he runs Penske Entertainment, and CEO Mark Miles is frequently deployed as the voice of executives, if you will, which includes series owner Roger Penske. Together, they met with the press at the Barber Motorsports Park paddock on Friday to share some insights in the field and questioning surrounding Team Penske's push-to-pass scandal. I wish we'd had the sound bites for that. But here's the way I understand it, and this is how it's kind of been explained to me. A line of code was altered by the team in the central logger units, the CLU. That gives its drivers full-time access to the P2P, which is the push-to-pass, across two events. And in response, IndyCar has locked down open access to CLUs starting this weekend through the deployment of software patches, where the engine control modules, the ECU, are only accessible by engine manufacturers and the series. The CLUs are the responsibility of each team and act as the hub that captures all chassis performance data sets and configuration of the steering wheel mounted on the dash and other functions related to monitoring and analyzing vehicle performance. That's the official statement. A little techie there for you, but basically, what happened? It sounds like there was a malfunction. It sounds like something was allowed to happen that shouldn't have been allowed to happen. That said, because of a result of that, the winner of the St. Pete race, the very first IndyCar race of the season, Joseph Newgarden, loses that race. And he loses his whole lap. He loses the points. So this is a huge, huge punch in the gut for the defending Indianapolis 500 champion with just the Indy 500 just a couple weeks away. Now, we don't have to worry about that here in the Oval. Now, there is a Grand Prix here, and so we'd use the push to pass here. But the Oval we do, but not in the Oval, we don't use the push to pass. So that doesn't come into play. So good thing is, thank God, we've never had a driver disqualified from the winner of the Indianapolis 500. Man, that would be terrible. That would be terrible. So and you know, I don't blame Joseph himself per se. I don't want to blame him. But it is what it is. At the end of the day, he's the driver. He's responsible for what happens on the inside of that car during the race. Now, it may have been a software malfunction. It may have been a an issue that was beyond the driver's control. But that said, it kind of sounds like to me that Joseph Newgarden saw it sitting there, and it's like you walk by on a sidewalk and you see somebody drop $20 and they just keep going. Do you pick it up and keep it, or do you give the $20 back to them? In my opinion, what Joseph Newgarden could have done was not take the push to pass. And was he told to? You know, questions that I am going through in my mind was, did the crew chief, I listened to the radio, but I didn't have that channel on, and so I don't know. But did the crew chief say, hey, take that push to pass? You would think a person at that level would say, no, don't take that push to pass. So it sounds like that it was there. They knew that they shouldn't use it, but they used it anyway. And that ultimately cost him the win in the points. So I think that's where it starts and ends. I don't see any suspensions coming down or fines or anything like that. That said, whatever caused that error to happen, hopefully IndyCar has it addressed and has it fixed, because that's a huge shot in the arm. So it is an exciting time to be here in Indianapolis, because in 2 weeks we're going to be here, out there at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. In case you didn't know, that is my happy place. And then we've got Caitlin Clark now here in Indianapolis with the Fever, the first round pick. The Pacers win a playoff game and puts them up, and really got, as Adam said earlier, we got the Bucks on the ropes. So, hey, it's an exciting time of the year. And, of course, we just had our draft, and a little bit later on here in the show, before we wrap it up, we're going to have Ed Kratz, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles, and SI.com jump on, and we're going to give a grade to everybody. That's right. And we're going to see how teams fare. Of course, the Colts picked up a decent first-rounder. We will get into this conversation a little bit more. I do have some concerns. But that's okay. I'm concerned about a past injury that I'm not sure is exactly healed itself up yet. But you know, we had that same thing with Anthony Richardson, but people should have listened to me. And by the way, just as an off note, IndyCar, bars political branding on vehicles at the Indianapolis 500. There you go. There's that. I've been really, because apparently there was some reports that Trump and Kennedy requested to be able to be on some cars. They're like, no, that's not happening here. So, as we know, the Indy 500 does happen here in just a few weeks. I'm not shocked that, I mean, if you want to utilize the Indy 500 as a brand and as a chance to for sponsorship, it's your money. I guess spend it however you want. But I'm not shocked that IndyCar is like, no. Say what you want. We've already talked too much politics on this show, way more than I ever do. But there is some left-leaning tendencies within that organization. So take it for what it's worth. My name's Tom Marquis, El Presidente. 917-889-8516 is our digits. We're going to bounce to another break. We'll be back, and we'll get back on track, and no pun intended, right here. 917-889-8516 is our digits. We'll be right back with Steve Wilson from Speedway Digest.
Rihanna, good girl going bad, take three, action, no clouds in my stones, let it rain, I hydroplane in the bank, coming down like a Dow Jones, when the clouds come we gone, we Rockefellers, we fly higher than weather, and deep clouds are better, you know.
Morning face, you get is when you don't sleep well. This is what happened to Linda.
Morning, guys.
Good morning. Ah, what is that thing?
It's me, Linda.
Oh, my God, it talks! Run!
No, it's me, Linda, from HR.
Am looks hungry! Save the children! Save them! Stay back! I've got mace!
Ow! They're one of my eyes!
We're moving!
It's called beauty sleep for a reason. And there's never been a better time to get some.
Get 20% off IKEA Sultan mattresses. IKEA, love your home.
Oh, hi.
Hey.
Seen on the board, do you guys have Black Rifle coffee here?
No, I'm sorry. We only carry good small batch coffee here.
Well, it is great small batch coffee.
Well, that really can't be unless it's fresh roasted, so, I don't, you know.
Well, it is fresh roasted.
I don't think you know what that means. You know what this is? This is Masa Lekwa Pike, which, of course, in the Indonesian language... Oh, let me finish. In the Indonesian language, it's weasel coffee.
You just made that up.
No, it's been passed through their digestive tract.
That's disgusting.
And then it's nature's wet processing.
Yeah, but is it good?
I mean, it's all right. Are they investor philanthropists? Do they support good causes?
Yeah, tons of causes. Veterans causes and first responder causes. But it doesn't matter because they make good coffee. So that's what I'm wondering.
Do you have any?
You know what? Actually, I'm just going to order it. They make it fresh and roasted.
Okay. Right.
Black Rifle Coffee.
It's good.
Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire.
All right, welcome back to the Ballot Saturday morning. We're halfway through the show today. Thank you, Adam Jividen, jumping on, talking some NBA playoffs with us, certainly talking about his Cavaliers, and we've got the Pacers got a good win last night here in Indianapolis, which is where we're based at, and there's a lot of stuff going on here in Indianapolis here coming up. Caitlin Clark is here in Indianapolis. The draft, we got all kinds of stuff. And then we got the Indy 500 coming up, which will be out there as well. Joining us now, though, is Steve Wilson, editor-in-chief of SpeedwayDigest.com and our official NASCAR contributor. We're going to talk Dover here in just a second. But how are you doing, Steve? Welcome back to the Balancer.
I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
Oh, good. Always good on a Saturday. I want to talk about Dega here in just a minute, but we've had some breaking news inside of IndyCar, which I know isn't your total forte, but I'm sure maybe you saw this. I wanted to get your thoughts about it. Joseph Newgarden, his win in St. Petersburg gets yanked from him because of an illegal push to pass. The way I've understood it, the way it is explained to me, and Tony was just talking about from the Tony D podcast about IndyCar, that it was some sort of a software malfunction where the push to pass was there. Joseph and his team knew he wasn't supposed to use it. He used it. He won the race. So the race has now been forfeited. Paulo, which was the P2, is now the winner. And, of course, he forfeits all the points for that race and so forth. Huge shot in the gut. I would like to think this was just an error, but it was errors two-part. It was a software error from IndyCar. But then it was error from the team. Like, you know, they knew they weren't supposed to. I think we just lost Steve. If we can't get him back. Okay. I think we have him back. Are you back with us, sir?
Yeah, I'm back. Sorry.
Oh, no problem. That happens. Anyway, we're just talking about the push to pass penalty to Joseph Newgarden. What are your knowledge of it? What are your thoughts about it? And I know NASCAR doesn't use push to pass. So I know this is a little bit out of your box range, but I didn't know if you had any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I've tried to keep up with this whole saga over the last couple of days, and you know my general, I guess, thoughts on this is that first is that yeah, just Newgarden had been using this apparently, saying that it was an advantage on the restarts, and you know it for them. You know, that's kind of, you know, against the rules as far as the way that they're written and, you know, not being able to use them during those particular times. But, you know, my general thoughts on this is that we're six or 7 weeks beyond this race. And IndyCar, if they were taking a look at this, you know, they've spent the last 6 or 7 or so weeks looking at this whole kind of deal. And, you know, NASCAR has always been about, you know, when whoever wins the race, you know, wins the race. Unless something happens on that day, post-race, as far as something with a tear down or post-race inspection, et cetera, in which they find some kind of, you know, real big issue, then, you know, the winner is the winner. And that's just kind of it. And, you know, I know that, you know, we go back to last year, Denny Hamlin and others, you know, go through and, you know, try and use social media to, you know, we saw where Chase Elliott was suspended, you know, over a particular issue. And we saw others, you know, fined or whatever, just because, you know, going on social media days or even a week later after, you know, a particular incident. But, you know, when it comes to these wins, you know, you're 6 or 7 weeks out from this. And then, you know, at what point do you just say that, you know, you just cut your losses and say, okay, it was a mistake. You know, we found some issues and, you know, they will be addressed. But, you know, at this point, you know, what is 6 or 7 weeks later really going to matter? Yeah, I know that, you know, there's points and all kinds of things like that are kind of tied up into this too. And, you know, yeah, Newgarden will have to forfeit those points and things like that. But the point is, you know, they've waited so long. I just feel that, you know, we're beyond that kind of, you know, looking into things. And, you know, if this was a couple of days later, a week later, or, you know, them saying, you know, look, you know, we were looking into this, but, you know, it's just too far out of this. You know, I just think they should just, you know, made a statement, say, hey, look, these are the issues that we've been investigating over this particular period of time, and then come back and say, you know, we will address these issues going forward, and whether that's a rule change or whatever the case may be. But, you know, to take the win away this far out is just, I just feel that it's just too far out to make a difference.
You know, and I totally agree with you. I think one of two things, and they should have known, hey, this push to pass was illegally there, but Joseph went ahead and used it. Okay, they should have known that at the race itself. And he should have been disqualified there at the race. But you're right, to go this long and have no penalty. I guess maybe they wanted to err on the side of caution. Hopefully they were wrong, and maybe they had to review data and that sort of stuff. But just curious. All right, let's get on track with Xfinity. Let's talk a little bit about Dega. We can't start talking about Dega and Xfinity and not talk about Joey Gates or Gass or however you say his name. And he decided to throw the bumper, if you will, after throwing a bumper. Whatever came from that? Did he get penalized? Did he get fined? Did he get suspended? What happened with that?
Oh, you know, you're talking about going back. What was it? That happened at Richmond.
Richmond. I'm so sorry. No, but go ahead.
Yeah, and which Joey Case decided that after an incident he's gonna rip that bumper off. I mean, he stood on the track and he took his time to rip that entire back bumper off of it and then take and pitch that bumper back. You know, I thinking back, you know, I don't even remember whether, you know, that's been, like I said, 2 weeks ago. I don't even know whether he was you know, whether he got a penalty over that or not. I think it was something small. I mean, he wasn't suspended or anything like that, because, you know, NASCAR, you know, really, the way the rules are written is that, you know, he marched onto a track, a hot track, and it's not like he stood beside the car or the emergency vehicles or something like that. I mean, he made a point to be on that racetrack. So, yeah, I think it was a very small fine that he ended up getting out of all of that.
What he should do is sign it, autograph it, and auction it off for charity. I bet you could get a lot of money for it, just because of the history behind it. I just bet he could. I mean, there'd be people out there that would bid on it. Let's get on touch with the Xfinity race. Obviously, Jesse Love picks up the Xfinity race last week in Dega. Give us your thoughts about Dega overall, and we'll get into today's Xfinity race in Dover.
Yeah, going back and looking at it, and you know, Jesse Love, you know, talking about him, I mean, he's been on tear this year with Richard Childress Racing, coming over and moving up from the ARCA series, and you know, scoring these poles time after time, and you know, finally coming to, you know, being able to go to victory lane there at Talladega. But you know, one of the biggest issues that come out of Talladega is something that we talked about back going to Daytona. And, you know, during the race, you know, a lot of us were keeping tabs on some of these lap times. And NASCAR is very well aware of this as to what is going on. And we had this issue back because of the way that the fuel cells have been reduced, and the size of the cells have been reduced in these cars that – you know, NASCAR has kind of changed around a little bit these stages, in which the stages at Talladega, all three stages, were almost exactly equal to one another. So this put into a situation in which a lot of teams were out there trying to save fuel to make it on, you know, the number of stops, you know, and kind of equalize some of these stages out to a certain degree. But what was happening is that you were seeing, you know, an entire pack of cars 6 or 7 seconds off the pole speed, and as much as 8 or 9, you know, miles per hour off the fastest lap of the race. And this caused a situation in which, you know, a lot of fans out there kind of feel that these cars are supposed to be wide open. They're supposed to be out there making moves. There, you know, this is not your typical drafting track in which, you know, there's a lot of jockeying for position. And, you know, while there was a lot of passing per se, you know, this whole riding around 6 or 7 seconds off the lap times, you know, 8 or 9 miles off the fastest speed of the race, you know, that's, you know, a lot of fans don't feel like that's exactly right. So, you know, that it's caused an issue over the last couple of events between Daytona and Talladega with this. And, you know, we've got several months before we even get back to these tracks. I mean, we don't go back to Daytona until August and Talladega back in October. So, you know, we've got months for NASCAR to kind of figure this out. And I know that, you know, at this point they've already set the stages onto it. But, you know, I think NASCAR is really going to have to come out there and make a concerted effort as far as, you know, one of the things that have been suggested is that NASCAR has a minimum speed that these teams have to meet, you know, week in and week out, which is about 115% off the fastest practice time. And, of course, NASCAR will take and adjust these from time to time, depending on the pace of the race and various different factors that come into this as far as weather or whatever the case may be. And I think NASCAR is going to have to come in there and they're going to have to make these adjustments, you know, during the race. These teams are going out there and sandbagging 6 or 7 seconds off the lap pace. And this is just really just causing an issue right now that I think, you know, a lot of people are talking about, and we're going to talk about, you know, as we get closer to, you know, August and October when we come back to Daytona and Talladega. And, you know, I think, you know, that's been one of the biggest issues that came out of that weekend. And, you know, I think we can all talk about, you know, Michael McDowell there at the very end trying to do a very late block there, stacking up the field, and Tyler Reddick going out there and going to victory lane for the first time that, you know, Michael Jordan has actually been there to go to victory lane with that team. So, you know, that's kind of big for this sport is, you know, somebody like Michael Jordan. And You know, a lot of people may not know this, is that, you know, Michael has a long history in this sport as a fan and, you know, even as a kid growing up in North Carolina, going to these events and meeting Richard Petty and, you know, all these other various people in that era. And, I mean, he's not new to this sport. He's been around for a very long time. So, I mean, you know, just for him to be able to go to victory lane is something big for us.
Well, I tell you what, it was great to see him hold the driver's kid and everything. It was really fun. And just to see his interaction, I really enjoyed the Michael Jordan experience with that race. Well, let's talk about Dover, the Monster Mile. Talk with us a little bit about what Dover is as a track and what it makes Dover such a challenging track and we'll get into the Xfinity race and then the Cup race here, sir.
Yeah, Dover is really challenging because we saw this yesterday in the ARCA series race that, you know, the high banks out there and the limited space in which the racing surface is there between the interior and exterior wall. You know, if you get an incident there, there's really not a whole lot of places to go for you. And this is really, you know, we talk about self-cleaning tracks all the time, and Dover is kind of one of those self-cleaning tracks that if you're in the wall on the outside, inevitably, you're coming down that racetrack and, you know, you're just hoping to avoid somebody else or somebody else to avoid you. I mean, we saw this with yesterday with Christian Rose and others that in these chaotic races that we get into these, you know, incidents where, you know, one turns into a multi-car incident. So, you know, drivers are going to have to be really mindful about this. This is a very fast racetrack, too, because of the banking out there, but also because of the concrete. You're going to have a lot of tire wear coming in both today and tomorrow. So, you know, it's going to be a little bit of tire management. It's going to be a little bit of chaos trying to, you know, avoid some of those cars that, you know, may only be on one car incident, and you're going to get tied up into this. So a lot of different factors are going to go into both today and tomorrow.
Well, let's talk about today's race. Brandon Jones obviously picked up his third pole win for the year or career-wise. And then you got Riley Hurst, Justin Allgaier, Austin Hill, Sheldon Krieg, Kyle Rutherman, Chandler Smith, and Jesse Love, and Taylor Gravy and A.J. Allmendinger round out the top five rows in today's race. In Dover, let's talk about that. What drivers stand out for you on this track and in this race?
You know, Brandon Jones has had just an awful lot of bad luck, and I mean, we've talked about this even before he came over to the Junior Motorsports this year, and getting him on the pole is you know, hopefully a step in the right direction, but it always seems like he's in these bad positions or bad situations, you know, week in and week out. Last week he had that in Talladega that inevitably put him out of the race. So he's trying to get this turnaround, you know, definitely from last year. Brandon Jones, you know, again, I feel bad for the guy. And, you know, we talk about him an awful lot, but, you know, he's going to have to kind of, you know, again, I think sometimes we talk about, you know, him trying to pick this up a little bit and trying to get over some of these things so that it's not such an issue going forward. You know, Ryan Truex, you know, won this race last year. And, you know, he's been part-time over the last couple of races or last year and this year with Joe Gibbs Racing. And, you know, this is a track that his brother, you know, has done very well at. So, you know, there's a lot of kind of talk about, you know, making sure that he's coming in and running good races, and he'll be part of this coming, you know, at the end of the race. But, you know, I really like, you know, somebody like, you know, Riley Herbst. He's starting second this weekend, and, you know, he's really picked this up an awful lot this year. Him and Cole Custer have really been kind of turning the page a little bit on the Xfinity Series for Stewart Haas Racing, and I'm really looking forward to him this weekend and what he's able to come out of Dover with.
Let's talk a little bit about Brandon Jones and his ability to really navigate. And I've got this superstition, if you will, when it comes to like picking drivers and betting. I have this superstition that if you're on the pole, your likelihood of winning is decreased a lot, and the winning the pole is great, but Brandon Jones is very good at strategically driving the car. And at a track like Dover, is it possible to win from the pole position for Brandon Jones?
Well, you know, I don't think so. I mean, it's such a tough track to be really doing this. I think, you know, last year, the you know, going back to last year, the pole winner didn't even finish the race. So, you know, if you're just looking solely at just last year, I think it's going to be a real tough order for him to be able to come and do this. I mean, it's going to be a long race today, and like I said, you know, the problem with being the leader is that once again, going back to what I said about this kind of being a self-cleaning track, is that, you know, a lot of these incidents don't necessarily happen up front. These are incidents that happen, you know, further back in the field, but, you know, this is a track in which, you know, it's kind of like Martinsville to Bristol. It doesn't really take a whole lot of time for you to catch them and start lapping these people. And again, you know, when incidents kind of break out, there's kind of really nowhere for you to go. So, yeah, I think it'll be tough. Is it manageable? Yes. But will he? I don't think so. I don't think he'll win from the pole today.
Good to know there. Who do you think does win tomorrow's Xfinity race? Let's get your pick right now, sir.
Man, you know, I was just talking about Riley Herbst. Really, I think, you know, this is kind of going to be a little bit more in the wheelhouse of somebody like Sheldon Creed or maybe Cole Custer, Ryan Truex, who's going to start from 12th. Jeez, I don't know. I'm gonna go with Ryan Truex just because of the fact this is kind of his home track and he won last year. So let's go with him.
Who's your driver? I'm sorry, you cut off right there at the very end.
Oh, Ryan Truex.
Ryan Truex, that's his home track, isn't it? No, that's Martin Truex. I guess the brothers, maybe, so they're both. What are your thoughts? What are your thoughts about this whole thing with Riley Herbst and Haley Deegan on the last lap of Dega? It seems kind of baffling and trivial. What's going on there?
Yeah, you know, once again, and it's just, you know, I think there was a lot of bad pushing, to be honest with you. You know, coming out of Talladega, and you know, we saw that, you know, with an incident between them and Haley Deegan there, you know, she got way out of line there, and you know, there was really nothing that she did wrong. There's really nothing that Riley Herbst did wrong. You know, it was just, in my opinion, I think it was a product of some really bad pushing and, you know, right there at the end of that race.
What are your thoughts on the qualification on the Cup race? Have they started the qualifying today for tomorrow's race? Or was that already done?
No, not yet. No. A little bit later this morning.
What are the drivers you're looking at for the Cup race? I mean, it looks like that everything has been right there for Denny and Bubba, for that matter, Kyle. They've all had wins within their grasp this year, just haven't been able to quite put it together in the right order. What are your thoughts about the Cup drivers tomorrow? And ones who have particularly been very close to a win recently on short tracks and couldn't pull it off.
Yeah. You know, a lot of this comes out as the product of the car, in which the way that the car races on these short tracks right now. And somebody that we would typically talk about on these short tracks is, you know, maybe going back to Richmond, we would always talk about someone like Kyle Busch or somebody like that. Marchville, we always talk about somebody like Denny Hamlin and so on. It is a product in which the way this car now races, in which, you know, we're seeing a different set of winners on these short tracks. I know going back and, you know, looking over, you know, the last couple of races, you know, Denny, I feel, is at this point that we're watching Denny in kind of the twilight of his career. And while he's got a few wins left in him, I think his focus is now beginning to shift a little bit into the ownership over there at 23XI. While I know he has an entire team of people, and he hired Kurt Busch and a lot of those people over at 23XI, you know, his focus is starting to be really more about 23XI at this point. So, you know, I think to get all a little bit over that focus and just focus on being, you know, the Cup driver for Joe Gibbs Racing. And, you know, I don't know if he'll ever become, you know, a NASCAR champion at this point, but I think, you know, he's going to go down as kind of our hit errors, Mark Martin. But, you know, you know, I think there's a lot of drivers right at this moment. Rasha Thane, another short track driver that we saw a couple of years ago just kind of make that really crazy deal over at Martinsville, but he's become a really good short track racer. I think he finished second or third or something like that last year. And, you know, William Byron that won the Daytona 500 this year, this is somebody else that, you know, has kind of come to be an all-around driver that we've seen him win on short tracks, road course, super speedways, and everything in between at this point. You know, he finished top five last year too. So I think, you know, there's a lot of drivers out there right now that are kind of in this hunt and kind of in these situations where, you know, they're able to start maybe taking this mantle away a little bit from the Kyle Busches and Denny Hamlins of the world in the short track racing.
Well, let's real quickly before we go, who is your DraftKings $5 pick for tomorrow's race at Dover?
It's too early for that. I'll have to wait.
All right. You text me after qualification. We'll give it to you after that. Real quickly, we got some new rules. We got some new rules for the All-Star race out in North Wilkesboro Speedway, which, by the way, when I was driving through North Carolina down to my son's, we went right past North Wilkesboro and really resisted the urge to make a stop because that's a special track. But there were some rule changes that were announced for the All-Star race at North Wilkesboro. It comes with a little twist, required to use a multiple tire compounds after excessive tire wear at Bristol, produced an incredible cup race by accident. So there's that. So there's some questions around new rules concerning the All-Star race at North Wilkesboro. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, a little bit of this came out of last year. You know, last year when they raced on this track, the surface was 40-plus years old out there. And, you know, there was, you know, they did start that race out there because they had rain and they had dried the track down, and then they started on rain tires. You know, a lot of people felt that, you know, the rain tires that they used in the open, you know, was superior to the tire that was used in the actual All-Star race. So, you know, NASCAR went back and took a look at this, and NASCAR is, you know, once again, you know, I talked a little bit about short tracks. It's, you know, these short tracks, if they've had to try and figure something out with the car, and, you know, these are now tires that they're going to try over at Wilkesboro to see whether, you know, this really extreme wear tire that there is kind of similar to the rain tire, but it's a standardized tire that they use. It's called that option tire out there that they're calling it. You know, I don't know. I mean, at this point, you know, that they repaved the track over the last couple, you know, since last May, and they've tested some out there. Cars Tour was just out there this week, but they use a different type of tire. I don't know. I think it's too early. I think that, you know, I think that option tire, it's going to have some really extreme wear behind it because that is such a new surface out there. There's really been nothing done to that surface out there, nothing raced on it. So nothing has really broke that surface in. And I think it's just going to cause a lot of tires to just hang out for a really, really long time. And you know, whether that changes the passing out there or not, I don't know. I think it's going to have to be a combination of between the weather out there. It's going to have to be a combination of this tire is going to have to wear really, really good out there before we'll see some substantial changes out there. So, I'm kind of intrigued a little bit, but at the same time, I'm not putting my – you know, I'm kind of reserved as to whether this will, you know, either fix the racing or whether this will fix the car or whether this will produce any more passing than we saw last year.
Steve Wilson, editor-in-chief of Speedway Digest and our official NASCAR contributor, joins us. Steve, we appreciate you always have joined us. Any words of wisdom? What are you guys working on? Where can people find your work and masterpieces, sir?
Well, you can follow us at Speedway Digest on Twitter, Facebook.com/Speedway Digest and SpeedwayDigest.com. Well, after this week, we'll be on the road for the next 4 weeks between all the staff out there and between you and everybody else. I mean, we've got a whole month of coming up in May in which somebody will be at the racetrack covering everything from goings on and Larson trying to do the double and everything else.
Well, we will definitely be there. We love partner with you during the month of May, so we're super excited about it. Well, Steve, you have yourself a great race weekend. Be safe, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, man. Talk to you later.
Steve Wilson, editor-in-chief of Speedway Digest and our official NASCAR contributor. Yes, definitely looking forward to partner with them during the month of May out of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. We'll be right back. We're going to put a grade on it on the NFL Draft Round 1 with Ed Kratz, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles and SI.com and our official NFL contributor. We'll be right back right here on the Collins Radio Network.
We put them dead. Children roam the streets, now open the war. Bodies hanging in the streets to a door. Royal flames will call the passing care. Bringing daylight to the night. Death is rotting in the town with armor. They come to take all your life out of the key.
The Air National Guard is a reserve component of the United States Air Force and serves alongside active-duty Air Force members in times of a national crisis. In addition, the Air Guard serves the state and local community in a wide range of capacities. The reason people join the Air Guard is as diverse as our members and includes such reasons as a deep desire to serve their country, money for college, travel, new job skills, and the pride that goes along with belonging to the greatest military organization in the world. I joined because I felt a calling to serve my country, but I didn't want to be far away from my family. So the Indiana Air National Guard was a perfect fit for me. With over 95 different career opportunities to choose from and 100% paid college tuition to any state-funded college, why not give us a call? Call 1-800-841-3103 or visit online at goang.com to find out more. Again, that's 1-800-841-3103. The Air National Guard, guarding America, defending freedom.
I can't believe it.
I've been playing 4-on-4 with a barbershop quartet.
Pass the ball, pass the rod. We're open, just pass the ball.
Nah, I can't believe how easy it was to save hundreds of dollars on my car insurance with Geico.
Yeah.
Believe it, Geico could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Morning face. You get is when you don't sleep well. This is what happened to Linda.
Morning, guys.
Good morning. Ah, what is that thing?
It's me, Linda.
Oh, my God, it talks! Run!
No, it's me, Linda, from HR.
It looks hungry! Save the children! Save them! Stay back! I've got mace!
Ow! They're one of my eyes!
We're moving!
It's called beauty sleep for a reason. And there's never been a better time to get some.
Get 20% off IKEA Sultan mattresses. IKEA, love your home.
Oh, hi.
Hey.
Seen on the board, do you guys have Black Rifle coffee here?
No, I'm sorry. We only carry good small batch coffee here.
Well, it is great small batch coffee.
Well, that really can't be unless it's fresh roasted, so, you know.
Well, it is fresh roasted.
I don't think you know what that means. You know what this is? This is Masa Lekwa Pike, which, of course, in the Indonesian language... Oh, let me finish. In the Indonesian language, it's weasel coffee.
You just made that up.
No, it's been passed through their digestive tract.
That's disgusting.
And then it's nature's wet processing.
Yeah, but is it good?
I mean, it's all right. Are they investor philanthropists? Do they support good causes?
Yeah, tons of causes. Veterans causes and first responder causes, but it doesn't matter because they make good coffee. So that's what I'm wanting.
Do you have any?
You know what? Actually, I'm just going to order it. They make it freshly roasted.
Okay. Right.
Black Rifle Coffee.
It's good.
All right, welcome back to The Balance. We roll into our final quarter of the show today. Thank you, Adam Jividen, super Buckeyes fan, Browns fan, Guardians fan, and super duper Cavs fan for jumping on, talking some NBA playoffs. Yes, the Cavs had a very disappointing start. I'll expect them to turn things around, and we'll see what happens with the Cavs. Pacers got a win here in Indianapolis. What a great win it was. We've got a lot to talk about here in Indianapolis. The month of May is coming up. The Indianapolis 500. Caitlin Clark is here. And this is the place to be outside of Philadelphia, City of Brother Love, which is Ed Kraft's beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles and SI.com, our official NASCAR contributor. How are you, sir? Happy Saturday.
Hey, happy final day of the draft day to you. I, for one, can't wait for it to be over. These are the three longest days of my work year. And, so one more day to go.
Well, we're going to get into it here, and I appreciate you taking some time. I know you've got a very busy schedule, so we're going to jump right into this. Let's start with the Philadelphia Eagles, and we're going to put grades on, you know, all of the teams here in just a moment, but we always want to make sure we start with our homer team, and that's with the Philadelphia Eagles and the Indianapolis Colts. So let's start with the Philadelphia Eagles. What kind of a look would you give them as far as what they've done for the franchise in this draft? Sorry, my brain is fried. Go ahead, buddy.
Yeah, well, they've taken three defensive players so far. Quinyon Mitchell, the Toledo cornerback in the first round. Kate Cooper DeGene, the Iowa defensive back in the second round. They traded up to get him. And then the late Friday night in the third round, they took Jaylee Hunt, the edge rusher from Houston Christian, which I learned last night used to be Houston Baptist, but I don't know, maybe that name rings a bell more than Houston Christian. They changed the name because everybody's like, what in the world? Where's Houston Christian? Obviously in Houston, but, you know, never heard of that school before, but It used to be Houston Baptist. So they went three defensive players. The big surprise was Howie Roseman, who traded up in four of the previous five first rounds of the draft, did not trade up in the first round. They stayed put and took the player they wanted at 22. But it was an unusual first round, right? They had 14 offensive players taken among the first 14 picks, and six of the first 12 were quarterbacks. I mean, you know, you could really just sit tight and pick who you think is the best defensive player because they weren't coming off the board early. So he didn't make a trade, and then on Friday he was busy as can be. He traded up to get Cooper DeGene within the division, traded with the Washington Commanders. Got Cooper DeGene, who was almost like a second first-round pick. He had a first-round grade on him and slipped a little bit into the second round. And then he traded back twice to get Jaylee Hunt from Houston Christian. So Howie Roseman was back to being trader Howie Roseman yesterday. And the result is now they have seven picks today. It's just what I need. Seven picks on the last day of the draft.
I love it.
So I don't know if they'll make them all, but we'll see.
Yeah, well, you know, as I've always said multiple times on this show, Howie Roseman, he's playing chess while everybody else is playing checkers. And as usual, does great in the draft. You know, certainly got to give him an A. You know, for once, Howie Roseman didn't need to make a move upwards to the great position in the first round. And, I mean, Mitchell's ability to run a 4.3340 at the combine at 6 foot and 195 pounds, he solidified his spot in the first round. So great job for the Eagles. Hopefully it does well in the long term. The Eagles. Go ahead.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I think in all of this, the draft, like an hour before the draft started, they extended A.J. Brown's contract. They gave him, you know, $27 million a year.
So right.
He's going to be here through the year 2029. Devontae Smith, his running mate at receiver is going to be here through 2028. They just locked down key members of this franchise for the foreseeable future. So you forget about that part of it. They gave A.J. Brown a boatload of money about an hour before the draft, which had us all scrambling inside the media house to, you know, get stuff going before the draft began. But, you know, that's the Eagles' way. That's Howie Roseman's way.
Well, yeah, and you sent me the text, and I was like, and then it was just five minutes later or so they announced it on the broadcast. So you gave me the scoop. I appreciate that. let's talk about my Indianapolis Colts. I usually use this time to crucify Chris Ballard. I'm not going to do it this time around. I'm a little concerned just because of past injuries, and I always have had to deal with injuries that we would draft somebody that's had some injury prone. But that said, I still give them at least a passing grade to B plus, and I feel like with Anthony Richardson coming back, he was at the game last night with Tony Dungy just coming back there, so maybe he's getting back to normal shape there, so we hope. But a lot of Tula too, and I hopefully I'm saying that right. He was out at the complex yesterday and did a press conference and wore a red tie. Who wears a red tie when you just been drafted in the first round with a team that's colors blue? But nonetheless, I think he's kind of a the more I hear about it, it's kind of an inspirational story. Like I said, there's a neck injury that forced him to retire from football at Washington, but he came back with a vengeance over the past 2 years at UCLA. He can sack. He can definitely sack, which is what we need. And after being, you know, cleared to play, he combines power, and he's got a lot of tackles in the backfield. He's got strong hands. He really is kind of a stud to get. And to get him where we got him at, he was the first defensive player drafted, I believe. I could be wrong.
He was.
I think he was the first. Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah, so he does have that potential risk based on his injury history. So that is where I should have given him an A. I got him a B+. And I know you and I were talking offline during this pick as well. What are your thoughts about the Colts? Then we're going to go through all of these teams here and give a quick grade, and you can tell me if you agree or disagree, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, first let me say, Tom, if I were a betting man, I would bet that you did not say that first-round pick's name correctly based on your track history.
You're probably 100% right. The good thing about him being local here, that's all they're going to be talking about for the next week and a half. And I'll have plenty of time to hear the correct pronunciation of his name.
That doesn't guarantee that once training camp starts, you'll remember it. But, you know, that's another story.
That's a very valid point. Very valid point.
But I like right. the pick. I mean, you know, he's you're right. He's a pass rusher. He can get to the quarterback and, you know, very quick, explosive off the edge. I mean, he's a great talent, but, you know, there is that injury history, and you know, maybe he's one of those guys that, you know, you wonder if he's going to make it to his second contract. You know, I heard comparisons to Leighton Vander Esch, the linebacker from the Cowboys who had neck issues at Boise State. Really good player for the Cowboys when he played, but, you know, the neck led to an early retirement. And, you know, neck fusion surgery is, you know, that's pretty serious stuff to be coming back off of. And, you know, you wonder one bad hit, what that's going to do to him. So great pick talent-wise, but big question mark with the injury history.
Yes, I agree. I totally agree. You got a sidetrack there, squirrel. But so let's talk about some of the obvious, not necessarily going to need to go number one overall and all that, but Arizona gets their guy, I think, and I love it. Marvin Harrison Jr. from Ohio State goes to Arizona. They also pick up Darius Robinson as well in the number 27. But the focus point was on Marvin Harrison Jr. He went far higher than I think a lot of people thought that he would. Of course, being the biased guy that I am, it would have been great to have him here in the city. Marvin Harrison Jr. and the Cardinals, we give them an A. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I mean, Jonathan Gannon, former Eagle D coordinator, you know, getting some talent down there in the desert. I mean, they're two good picks. I mean, you can't argue, really, with those picks. I mean, Robinson's a good, you know, defensive lineman, and Marvin Harrison considered the best receiver in a very talented crop of receivers. I mean, he was one of seven receivers that were taken in the first round, which tied a draft record for the most receivers taken in the first round. It was set in 2004, so... you know, and we've seen receivers come off the board here in the second and third rounds, and there'll be more coming today. So he's the best of the bunch, you know, by all evaluations. So just based on that pick alone, yeah, I'm going A.
And the Colts will manage to pick up one of those receivers, so I'm not complaining about that because we certainly right. needed a receiver. So I think, you know, what we saw in the first six rounds, I mean, it was pretty much all chalk. Everybody knew – people were going. let's talk about Michael Penix Jr. I like him. He's a former IU guy. But I had to give him a C, Atlanta, a C on this for the number 8 overall pick. He ended up in the top 10. But Penix suffered season injuries, ending injuries in his four years here at Indiana. But he has a strong pocket presence, strong arm, accuracy, which he showed clearly in Washington that I think that's what caught the Atlanta Falcons' attention. They needed a quarterback. They see Michael Penix out there at number 8 overall. It's confusing, though, and you and I talked about this offline. They just gave Kirk Cousins a massive contract. And if I'm Kirk Cousins, I'm saying, what am I now, a redheaded stepchild? Intended for any redheaded stepchild out there. But, I mean, if you're Kirk Cousins, you got to be saying, what the heck? So for those reasons, I give him a C. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it was the curveball. You know, there's always a curveball somewhere in the first round, and, you know, it came right there, I think. Nobody expected the Falcons to take Kirk Cousins, but I like how they rebounded and took the pass rusher from Washington State, Braylon Trice, later in the draft. So, you know, everybody thought they'd take Dallas Turner, pass rusher. They needed help, but they got one later. So, you know, quarterbacks are hard to find, and, you know, you talk about Penix's injuries, and I don't think any of them are, you know, in career impactful. Just he's had bad luck with them. And Kirk Cousins, he's coming off an Achilles injury, 35 years old. I know they gave him a ton of money, but, you know, how long is he going to play? I mean, maybe in 2 years Penix takes over. We saw it with Brett Favre when he was in Green Bay. The Packers took Aaron Rodgers, and he sat for a couple of years, and he came in and was a great quarterback. So, you know, to sit and learn, that's what quarterbacks used to do. They would sit and learn. They wouldn't just be thrown into the fire like we saw with Anthony Richardson last year. Thrown right into the fire, he got hurt in, you know, the first month, and he was gone. So, you know, it's not a bad thing that if you love a quarterback, you know, to go ahead and take him. You know, it's the most important position in sports, and it's the hardest position to find in sports, I think. So, you know, kudos, I guess, to the Falcons. I wouldn't give it a C. I might give it a B. I mean, you could have gone in other directions there with that high a pick. But if you feel that strongly, and listen, Cousins, he left a pretty good situation in Minnesota to come to Atlanta. I mean, he had better weapons in Minnesota. He had a, you know, better head coach, I think, in Minnesota. And he gave all that up to come to Atlanta. But, you know, he's kind of, you know, mercenary at this point. So, yeah, if the Falcons like Penix, sure, go ahead, take him. They still got their pass rusher later in the draft. And, you know, I think Penix, to me, is my favorite quarterback in this draft, to be honest. I love, and maybe it's because he's left-handed. You don't see too many lefties throwing the ball. Reminds me of Kenny Stabler back in the day with the Oakland Raiders. So, you know, I like Penix. Maybe it was a little too high, but, you know, that was a curveball, and it affected the draft. You know, the Broncos, Bo Nix, maybe they would have taken him. The Raiders certainly would have taken Penix. So, you know, if you like the guy, go ahead and take him. You have no real allegiance to Kirk Cousins other than the money you're going to pay him for the next couple of years. But, you know, we'll see how it plays out for him.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about the Buffalo Bills. A little quirky, but I still think they did all right because of what they were able to, how they were able to position. So they didn't have a round pick in the first round. They traded down twice on Thursday. They swapped for a fourth round and a third rounder and moved up in round 7, allowing the Chiefs, though, to pick up Xavier Worthy. This is where I feel like that decision may come back to bite them, especially how good the Kansas City Chiefs are and that dynasty reign that they're on. You just allowed them to add another superstar to their roster by doing that. But at the same time, you positioned yourself good going on in the future. So still give them a passing grade. But what do you thought about the Bills not having a pick in the first round, but they did pass on receiving Xavier Worthy, which could come to haunt them?
Yeah, you know, it's you never like to trade with a team that, you know, you're trying to beat out to get to the Super Bowl. But, you know, that's the risk you run, and if you feel strongly about it, go ahead and do it. We've seen the Eagles make trades within the NFC East several times. I mentioned the one last night they made with the Commanders. You know, they've traded with the Cowboys before. So, you know, they don't have any qualms about that. Yeah, I mean, the Chiefs were going to get a good receiver no matter where they picked, whether it was at, what, 28 or 27, wherever Buffalo was, or 32. They were going to get somebody good. But for the Bills, you know, listen, they traded out of the first round. They had the first pick yesterday in the second round, and they went with a receiver. I can't remember got a really good receiver too. So, you know, the downside, like you said, is they helped the Chiefs out, but I think the Chiefs would have helped themselves anyway with a pick of a receiver a few selections later. If not Worthy, then, you know, maybe somebody else.
Well, we can't go through a grading system without talking about the Chicago Bears. I think, and I agree with a lot of the fan stuff on social media with the Bears. They think this may have been one of their best drafts in decades, if not ever. They managed to pick up the USC quarterback, number one overall, no surprise, against chalk at Caleb Williams, and then turned around and from Washington, that wide receiver from Washington, name it, Roma Zone or something like that, in the number nine pick. And it's been clear since he won the 2002 Heisman Trophy that Williams would be the top pick in the draft. His ability to make great out of the structure plays, deliver deep bombs and throw. I think the Bears are now offensively a team to be reckoned with. The problem is the Bears do what the Bears do, and can they actually make all their pieces work together? That would be my question. I'd certainly give them an A for what they did in the draft.
Oh, for sure. I mean, two picks in the top 10, trading away to the Panthers last year for the Panthers to take Bryce Young. That was a great trade for the Bears, and they reaped the benefit. I mean, how can you not give him an A? I mean, Caleb Williams, if he turns out to be what everybody thinks, is that's a home run, and then Roma Dunze is another home run. Back-to-back homers in the top 10, yeah, certainly an A. I think the Bears are going to be really an improved team. And that division, that might be one of the best divisions in football now, with Bears on the rise, the Packers making some noise in the playoffs last year, the Vikings trying to get back in the mix, and, of course, the Lions won the NFC Championship game. So that division is going to be awfully, awfully good. And, I don't think the Bears are going to take a backseat to any of those teams.
You know, I didn't get a chance to talk with Adam about this earlier, but I did talk with him about it offline. He's scratching his head on this whole thing with the Cleveland Browns. Again, they passed, they set out another first round due to the Deshaun Watson trade, the deal that would continue to be questioned if Watson can't regain from what he showed prior to studying in 2021 and serving an 11-game suspension in 2022. He showed some signs of turning things around. And then he was injured, but yet they traded away their pick for the first round. Who does that? The Browns. That's the only F I've given so far, but in the first round. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I didn't see who they picked in the later rounds. I'm so Eagles focused that it's hard to follow every team, every pick. But
sure.
I don't know what they did. I don't know how they rebounded from that. But the Browns already had a pretty good roster. And I don't know what their salary cap situation is, so maybe they figure, we don't want to pay a first-round pick, because we're still paying Watson a ton of money. We have Myles Garrett, and, we have some other players on this roster that, need to be paid or are getting paid. So I'm sure they had a good reason for it, and I don't know what they did after that going out of the first round. But, the Browns are still a pretty good team, and I'm sure they got better with whoever it was they took. But, they made that move for reasons they think helped them.
Let's talk about the Jets. The Jets did get some help at the tackle, selecting Penn State's Alua Fanchu. You're a Penn State guy. How do you say that name, Alua Fanchu? Fanchu?
I think you handled that pick fine, Tom. I think you handled that pitch fine. I'm going to take your word for it, because I have no idea
what
he said.
We'll go with that.
Yeah, Olu Fashanu, I think. Olu Fashamu or something. I don't. Thankfully, I don't have to spell it, because he's not on my team, the Eagles team. But, good luck to the New York writers who have to spell that one.
Well, let's just keep here. Just a minute or two left here. I wanted to get your thoughts on overall. The overall draft itself, in the direction that it's going, and the way teams handled the draft and stuff. Do you think that this is what you would call a successful draft? I mean, you got to like what the Cowboys did too. I mean, I know that they're your arch nemesis, but they got the kid from Oklahoma, the Tyler Grusin, and that was a huge pickup for them that they needed. So I think the Dallas Cowboys are starting to turn things around. The Lions, they picked up that guy from Alabama, Teron Arnold and the number 24 overall. Rick is ecstatic about that pick. And the Lions are going places. They're going places. So I said all that to ask you, what are your thoughts overall about the draft there?
Yeah, I think, and again, I haven't looked at every team's picks, but every time I looked up, it seemed like the Washington Commanders were making a pick, and they were picking very well. I mean, I think the Washington Commanders, and again, I haven't looked at every team, but they're gonna make playoffs next year. I'm going to say that right now. You know, it's not even May, but boy, they had a great draft. I mean, they took a tight end, Ben Sinat, who I liked, who's going to learn behind Zach Ertz. I can't remember all the picks. They took their quarterback, Jaden Daniels. If he can play and he can develop, they're going to be a very, very dangerous team. If not next year, the year after, the year after that. I mean, they could be, if these players develop properly that they took last night, in the next couple of years, they could end up in the Super Bowl. I mean, that's how strongly I feel about it, what the Commanders did last night, what they did in the offseason. You know, they have a new owner, new coach, new GM. It's a new year down there. What I'd like to see them do next is get a new stadium, because FedEx Field is the worst by far of any stadiums in the league. But I think that day will come eventually, too. Maybe sometime in the next 5 to 7 years they'll get a new stadium. But I think the arrow for the Washington Commanders is pointing up to me. Not having looked at every team, I think they've had the best draft so far after 2 days.
Well, as you mentioned earlier, the Eagles are on the clock with a bunch of picks today. How do they finish it off? What do they do? What are they going to address? Who do you think they're going to go after? Any diamonds in the rough that you see out there that they're going after today?
Well, they have 3 picks in the 4th round, 120 overall, 123, and 132. It's ironic because they don't have any 4th-round picks next year. They traded that away for DeAndre Swift last year's draft. So I think they'll probably try to package some of these 7 picks and make a deal for next year, get some picks, maybe make a deal to move up in the 4th round to grab, I don't know, they might go tight end. Maybe, you know, Jatavion Sanders, the Texas tight end, is still out there. Dallas Goedert's 29 years old now. They drafted Dallas Goedert when Zach Ertz was 29 years old, and they coexisted for a couple of years. So I could see him going tight end to prepare for that day when Goddard's gone, but in the meantime, he can teach the young buck they bring in. So Jatavion Sanders, maybe Theo Johnson from Penn State, another really good tight end. There's a couple others tight ends, so they could go there. I think they go offense. I think, you know, they need an interior lineman, maybe the kid from South Dakota State, Mason McCormick, makes sense. I'll say this about the Browns is they took this Zach Zintner from Michigan at pick 85. The Eagles are ready to pick him at 86. And then when the Browns took him, and I like him, I think he's a really, really talented interior offensive lineman. Yeah, he doesn't have any position versatility. He's a straight-up guard. Probably can't play center, can't play tackle. So you're getting kind of a one-trick pony there. But the Eagles are going to take him, and the Browns grabbed him. So the Eagles traded back with the 49ers to pick 94 last night. So I could see them going interior offensive line, the Eagles. Maybe they pick up a defensive tackle, linebacker, maybe another receiver to play the slot. Certainly receiver's not a question for them with Smith and Brown locked down for the next 5 years. But, you know, those are the directions I think they'll go. I think they'll do some offensive stuff early. Maybe they even grab a running back at some point. Saquon Barkley signed for 3 years, but, you know, they could use some depth there. So I think offense is really the direction they're going to turn to once this thing starts up at noon.
Well, I've been told by Melissa, who is a school teacher in the real world, how to pronounce our first-round pick with the Colts. It's Leia 2. Leia 2. I got it. See how hard it
is?
How hard was that?
Is that his first name or last name? There's a last name attached to that, isn't there? Leia 2? Latu?
Latu? Leia 2? Latu? I don't know. Jury's still out on that. I'll get confirmation.
You better get back in classroom, man. You better park yourself in your chalkboard there and go back to school.
That's right. Well, they don't use chalkboards anymore. They use whiteboards.
I know.
Isn't that crazy?
It's
funny.
Times are changing.
Father Time stops, so nobody does it. Ed Kraft, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles and SI.com. Covering the draft for us. We'll let you go, sir. I hope you have a safe drive on in there to the complex another day. Are they at least feeding you good there?
Yeah, they used to
feed us better. They used to bring us in the cafeteria and feed us, you know, the player food, which was phenomenal. But they order out, so they get some local restaurants, some Italian places. You know, some other sponsors bring stuff in. So, yeah, they keep us well fed. You know, but you can't eat too much because then you feel like you need a nap. And, you know, there's no time.
I hear you. Better with the suite. All right, buddy. We'll talk with you soon, and we look forward to your reports. Where can people find those at, by the way?
On Twitter, at Kratze, K-R-A-C-Z-E, all sorts of stuff there. We're so inclined. So thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, buddy. We'll talk with you soon. Bye-bye.
All right. See you, buddy.
Ed Kratz, be ready from Philadelphia Eagles, NSI.com, and our official NFL contributor, breaking down the draft. And he is a walking zombie, as he said. This is the biggest 3 days of his year, if you will. Well, think about it. I mean, his schedule follows the Philadelphia Eagles schedule. So, you know, on Sunday he works. And throughout the week, he I'm sure he does some work with the practices and stuff, but not the hours that he's putting in now. So, hey, he gave us some love today. We'll take it. Thank you, Adam Jividan, for jumping on and talking with us about the NBA playoffs, what's going to be happening with the Pacers. We hope they can keep things moving up and moving going. Thanks, Tony Donahue, who called us from the parking lot of a Buc-ee's. You know you've really made it when your guest calls you from the parking lot of a Buc-ee's. Talking about Barber, obviously big story with the Indianapolis. I mean, I'm sorry, with IndyCar, with the defending Indianapolis 500 driver and Joseph Newgarden and the push to pass, helping us break that down and the understanding of that. More to come on that. Certainly we're following that as well. Steve Wilson, editor-in-chief of SpeedwayDigest.com, our official NASCAR contributor. Talking about what's going on with Dover. And, of course, as you know, we just had Ed Kratz, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles, and SI.com. My name is Tom Marquis, El Presidente. Don't drink and drive. It isn't cool. I'm out of here. Deuces.
Wide quick stop, midnight tea top, Jack and her cherry coke town. Mama and daddy put...